Everyone, Bonnie made a friend in class.
She's already making friends.
No, she literally made a new friend. I want you to meet Forky.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
He's a spork.
Yes, yeah, I know. Forky is the most important toy to Bonnie right now. We all have to make sure nothing happens to him.
Woody, we have a situation.
I am not a toy. I was made for soup, salad, maybe chili, and then the trash.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon, sponsored by ExpressVPN and Blinds.com. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Sonny Bunch and Jonathan V. Last. I'd like to remind you the Subbeacon is available on iTunes and Google Play. Just look at our podcasts and search for Subbeacon. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. Gentlemen, how are we? Sonny Bunch, what are you doing here?
Working from home is weird. Working from home is weird. It's fine, but it's a little bit weird.
And yeah. And yet you
I've never done it before.
No. Even when you worked here.
No,
yeah, you should work at the WeWork up the street.
I'd rather die than get a WeWork.
WeWork looks awesome. The WeWorks are the future.
Ugh.
In the future, everyone is either going to work at a WeWork or at a giant campus. If you are not a big enough corporation to own a campus, you will simply tell your people to buy their own WeWorks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well. And once we get there, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
And yet you've arrived here still in your sartorial splendor. Yeah. I thought you'd come in a tank top and shorts.
If you're going to work from home, you have to have certain standards.
Oh, wait a minute. Do you dress like this at home when you're working?
Absolutely, 100%.
But there's no pin.
I don't have a lapel pin. Well, I'm not wearing my jacket.
I took my jacket off
because it's really hot in here. But I get dressed up. I take a shower every morning. Mm-hmm. I brush my teeth. I comb my hair. You know, I got to get the kids ready to
standards.
Daycare.
You got to have standards.
If you don't have standards, you'll start slipping.
So it's not like bathrobe slippers work.
No, not yet. I assume that's like a month from now. I finally completed my office. When the 1,000 packets of Equal showed up at my doorstep via Amazon, so now I'm ready to go. I make a pot of coffee every morning, mm-hmm. and I got some milk and some Equal.
And you're ready to roll.
Ready to roll.
Is it weird? Like the silence? Do you find when I'm at home for a stretch of time, if nobody's at the house for like, you know, if Kate's up with the kids or something, it's just me. After the first day is great, and after that you start talking to yourself. I don't know. I start talking out loud. I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds like Vic. That sounds a lot like
not you, not Sonny.
The fact that you don't have anybody there to win votes from.
Do you monologue or do you dialogue? Are you actually talking both halves of the conversation?
JVL.
definitely dialogue.
That was such a great sentence, wasn't it? Thank you.
I do that sometimes, but I did that sometimes in the office already, like because I was basically working from home anyway already because I would always have my door closed and nobody would come in and talk to me. So,
well,
I've been preparing for this for the last 14 years.
Have you already moved somebody into his old office?
There, I think we have candidates. We'll have to go through several rounds.
Are you going to have them do kumite to get
whatever
the
it takes? Yes, I'm going to take a stick and break it in two. But there's actually, you know, I said, you know,
but there's three.
There's three of them. There's three of them.
No, you should make it quick. You should do it like the group house auditions. Remember when you would first move to the city and you would live in a group house?
You'd sit there and then screen them.
And then like the current roommates would sit there and talk to the new person and say, what are your interests?
Right.
Do you also like mm-hmm. sports mm-hmm. and politics? Mm-hmm. I was reading, it was funny, there was a piece maybe in the Washingtonian
that
or something.
That sounds like the worst thing in the world.
It is. It's
Which
literally
is why I spent all of my money to have a mm-hmm. tiny studio mm-hmm. apartment mm-hmm. by myself when I came to the city.
I did one of those when I moved to the city, but then I found a basement apartment that was like right at the top end of my mm-hmm. price range. I was like, I need that right now. And it was perfect. No, but there was one friend was recounting a story on Twitter that was like, you know, I had to do one of these. And the first question they asked was, what was your favorite episode of The West Wing? And this guy hates The West Wing. He's just like, I knew at that moment that I would never be able to live with these people. So really, it's a useful process.
I really
process.
Like the one where process. Sam and Toby made the conservatives look stupid.
Yeah. Oh, wait.
Which season was at all of them? Kate lived in a house, and actually she lived with Molly Hemingway, and they would have to screen people as well. But
I would say it's more.
And there would be like a guy, and Kate would say like, you know, like in every other way he was very nice, and he could pay. But she remembers one of the things was nudist. He was like he would walk. He said one of the things is he likes to walk around nude. So they took him in. No, I'm just kidding.
That man was Victorino Mattis.
That was a Seinfeld episode too, where Kramer, right? He moves in.
Is
with,
that right?
With Julia Louis-Dreyfus's roommate, he starts dating her, and they become nudists in Julia Louis-Dreyfus's apartment.
I thought there was like a nudist who was living across the street, and then it was the contest.
That's right. It was the contest, and then Kramer appears.
No, that also. But there's also a moment where Elaine has a roommate who Kramer starts, and anyway,
that's good. Also, Jerry's girlfriend. JVL, how are you?
I'm fine.
How was your fourth?
I'm fine. Fourth was fine. I didn't. Flash had a very neat experience. This past weekend, he was with his travel team at a workout at their workout facility on Sunday morning, as is never the case. But we're getting ready for a big tournament. Got to go to the tournament. Anyway, one of the players from the local minor league baseball team was there working out, just in the batting cages, working on some stuff, and Flash recognized him, and towards the end of their practice, he went over and said hi to him, and then said, hey, Jackson, would you mind coming over and, like, maybe saying some stuff to our team? And this guy, who is paid to play baseball, put his stick down and said, yeah, no problem, man.
Oh, wow.
Came right over, gave the kids a pep talk.
How old is the player?
23.
Yeah.
But the reason he was able to so perfectly engage with these kids, this is so great, is because his little brother is Flash's age, 11.
Oh.
And in fact, his little brother and his dad came to work out with him. Oh. It's the coolest, like, family thing. And so he's, like, signing balls for these kids and, like, talking to them.
So this was Reggie Jackson?
This is Jackson Reitz, who is a third-round pick. Pretty high level pick.
Excellent.
Pretty good prospect.
So he'll be playing in Fredericksburg next year.
Possibly. There may be some complications with the stadium deal.
Fingers crossed.
But the first thing Flash said to me when he came home, because I was not there for this, was, boy, Dad, this guy was swole. His arms are so much bigger than yours. I was like, well, he is only 23 years old, and he is paid to play baseball for a living.
Thank you for reminding.
Literally a professional.
And you get paid, too.
Did you ask him if Jackson has ever caught a comma splice?
This
wow.
is
okay.
Jackson's arms are large.
I see it. Yep.
He's a catcher.
Yep.
He's got guns. And Flash goes, I mean, he wasn't even flexing. Okay. Thanks.
I bet you have better knees. You know those catchers.
That's true.
It hurts to be down there.
He's not gonna. He's it not gonna be to able be to down stand there. Up. Oh, in yeah, 20
when,
years.
No. When he's my age, he'll barely be able to walk.
I bet he's bent like that. That's normal for him in that photo.
Victorino, how was your July 4th?
It was lovely. We actually went up on the morning of the 4th by train. We took the Amtrak, the Northeast Regional. It left like at 6:10 in the morning from Union Station.
Wow, the regional takes a long time to get to.
We got to Old Saybrook. Past New Haven. It's the stop after New Haven, which is Old Saybrook.
Did you go?
It's only 13 stops.
Did you go to Ogdenville? It's on the map.
That's right. So we got there. If you left at like 6:10, we got to Old Saybrook around 12:20. Yeah, so it's 6 hours.
Why did you choose to train it?
I didn't
want to
drive. I hate driving up there.
Driving
on the 4th. Plus,
$1,000 once you get the train back and forth.
No, not bad. It was a one way because we came back just the two of us. We left the kids behind.
Oh,
yes, that's right.
So
that's why I was 5 minutes late to the studio this morning.
So the four of you went up.
Yes, we went up and we had a lovely time.
And then two of you came back.
Yes, four people entered, two men leave.
Just like
two
Kumite.
People leave. Yes, that's right.
Are
two
we
people leave.
Are the kids still up there?
They are up there in Connecticut, and then
why are you here?
Then Kate is going to do this damn podcast, and then Kate's going to go back up to get the kids and bring them to Jersey.
She'll
and
drive.
Then yes, okay. And then another week in New Jersey. So
what?
Yeah, it's like summer camp. That's our version, since we don't really have summer camp.
Kids?
So that's their summer camp, and wow. It's he's yeah, like my son's spending all day fishing. It's great. We did a 5K, a family 5K.
Family 5K
organized by my sister-in-law, Erin Dwyer, and I came in second behind Captain Bill.
You didn't all run together?
Well, we all started together, but then after that, every man for himself. I left the kids in the dust.
Why would you run together?
That's
dumb.
Right. That's
why
right.
Would
because
you, just,
you have young kids who you want to make sure they're after, enjoying.
This is a good. This is a good point
experience.
Because they'd never run like more than a mile. This is a very good point, JVL. So on my mat, my run, I would hit pause to just, you know, check up on them, make sure they haven't died, you know, or collapsed from asthma or something, and then continued on. And then after I finished. Then I doubled back to see where they were, and then Arlie Ermey style, like at the Marine Corps Marathon, you know.
Come on,
them,
maggots!
Yeah. Actually, Bill did that, and it was
you
funny.
Run like old people.
Mark that one down. That's right.
That's an actual line.
That's an actual line. It's a great line. So the first 2 miles it was like a little over 10 minutes, and then I tried to keep up with Bill, and I think he slowed down for me. And that third mile was 8:49. So that
That's
was exhausting for me. Yeah, I'm sure he was slowing down for me too, which is crazy. But after that, the highlight, I think, was on like a couple days later, Kate and I took the whole family and my Bill and his wife were gone, but their kids were still there. We took everybody to a big brunch at the Grizzled Inn, the Sunday Hunt Breakfast, which is an all-you-can-eat buffet. And but I wanted to make sure that my nephew and niece knew all the rules of the buffet. So I sat all the kids down.
You had a heart-to-heart?
I had a heart-to-heart with everybody just to go through. Because
no melon. No melons. There's going to be cantaloupe and honeydew up there. Don't eat it.
Don't eat the melon. And the other thing is, you know, I mean, her family was not a big buffet family because they eat like birds. You know what I mean? My family, you know, at the end, my mother's putting stuff in the purse. So, so rule number one.
Does she bring a Ziploc bag for the rolls?
For the rolls, for later, which you'll never get to, but it's the principle. Number one, I told them, look around.
Did
okay?
you Wait. You're
yeah,
reading
please.
Off a piece of paper
I
right
am.
Now. Did you
I
actually
I wrote
prepare?
Down the rules.
Did you prepare a speech for
mentally,
them?
Mentally.
Did you write this down and read it to them? Did you have a PowerPoint?
Maybe.
Did you sit them down? Did you sit them down on the couch in a row?
I thought about a PowerPoint.
And plug your computer into your television.
That would have been great.
And click the mouse. Rule number one.
Rule number one, I said, look around. Don't just start like you walk in. Ooh, I'm going to start piling my plate with the first thing I see. Because next thing you know, you got like bagel and muffin. Okay, that's what they want you to do. Oh, have the bagel and muffin, and now you're stuffed, okay? So don't pile the plate. Look around. See what's there, and then come back. The buffet's not closing.
Recce? Always take a recce?
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Okay, number two.
It's a reconnaissance.
That's right. Thank
you. It's a reconnaissance for the non-mil-spec
yes.
community.
Very good. Don't pile your plate, okay? Don't be an animal. And this is not Pizza Hut used to do this. Pizza Hut used to have the salad bar, and it was as much as you could fill on the plate, but you can only go once. So people would make the most, you
what?
Know what I mean? So you'd pile up on your plate. You're allowed to go to the salad bar, but you can't get more salads.
You can
so
only
you
go
only
to the
one.
Salad bar
this
one
was,
time?
This was the Pizza Hut in Tom's River, 1985.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like the Pizza Hut I went to growing up.
Right.
Pizza Hut I went to growing up was like, here's a
once.
Bunch of pizzas, you pigs. Get as much in your gullet as you can as many times as you want.
There wasn't even any free pizza. It was just salad.
Oh, you just had a salad bar?
Salad bar. This was like this is the 80s. So I said, that's not the case. Put on your plate what you think you can finish on your plate. I hate seeing people leave all these plates on the table with all this food. Like, oh, I can't finish it. And here's like, you know, two giant slices of roast beef. That's terrible. Okay? And that's
it's
a
just
sin.
Wasteful. Think
it's
of those,
wasteful.
Think of those starving kids in Ethiopia.
That's right. It's a sin.
Eritrea. Where
it was. It's true.
Where are the kids starving
so,
now?
So don't do that. Okay? And then number three, you know, again, you can always get more. All right? But get a clean plate. Do not bring the dirty plate.
That's actually the law in Virginia.
That's the law in Virginia.
No, I think that's actually. I think it's actually technically.
Really? But what if the server
has
not cleared your dirty plate by the time you get back? What if the server has not cleared your?
You got to start stacking
them.
You just
that's
start stacking the plates.
That's a situation.
Start stacking the plates.
Yeah, and then you know what happens after that? You put the plates on another table.
Well, I mean, if you stack them.
Just saying.
If you stack them, you don't need to do
but
that.
But save your silverware. Save your silverware.
Well, yeah, you got to save your silverware.
Save your silverware. Okay, so you explain
and
that to them.
And when you leave the table with an empty plate, this is maybe an addendum to your list of
please,
rules.
Please, please.
When you leave the table and there's an empty plate, make sure to put your silverware on your napkin
yes,
when you leave.
Absolutely.
Because you don't want the server touching your silverware with their dirty hands.
We had a great waitress, and she actually gave us, here's an extra napkin so you could put your silverware on.
Oh, huh? Big tip for her.
Big
tip.
I did. Okay, and finally, if there are utensils, use them. Tongs, spoons, whatever, use them. If you need to use your hands for whatever it is, if by any chance.
In the food?
Like, oh, I'll take a roll. I don't know. I'm just saying, hypothetically, you don't know. Whatever you touch, you must take. That's all I'm going to say. You touch something, you take it. And I've seen adults left like, oh, this bread isn't good, and they put it back.
You should not take anything out of a receptacle that does not have tongs, I think would be a better one.
You know, I have a question about this.
Okay.
Because on the one hand, you think, oh, the tongs are so sanitary.
Everyone's touching the tongs?
So your question is, you have like a row of muffins, and you could just like take the muffin you want with your hands, mm-hmm. at which point your hands are only touching the food that you're going to put in your mouth. Or you could touch the tongs that everybody else has used to take the muffin and then use that dirty hand, which has touched these filthy tongs, which are filled with everybody's grease,
yeah, the problem,
to take apart your muffin.
I understand what you're saying. I get this. That's actually a fair mm-hmm. point. But
sure.
One thing you can do is leave the wrapper on the muffin while you eat it. That's a thing you can
do. I guess.
Another thing, though, is yes, that there's simply too much risk of contamination if you stick your hand in there. You could bump into other people's muffins.
Oh, yeah, with the back of your fingers. And nope, you know.
That's just not done.
Well,
another
way to solve this, JVL, is the Sunday Hunt breakfast open at 11 a.m.
Is it a big hunt?
It's Mike's.
The Big Hunt. In DuPont Circle.
The Big
Famous
Hunt.
Famous bar, Big Hunt.
Yes, it opened at 11 a.m., and we got there at 11. We had a reservation for 11 a.m., so we're the first people all over that stuff.
So if it's a virgin buffet with nobody else having touched it, then at that point, screw the tongs.
I'm just going right in there.
Did you give them a list of like your priority targets? Like you want to go for the meats because the meats are the most expensive?
I leave this. That's a matter of choice, but I also had a secret rule, but I didn't tell anybody, which was omelet bar first.
Oh, because you didn't tell them because I wanted to be the first one.
The rest of my fam, party of eight. Sorry, I'm the first one in there. Everyone else is like, what? They have to wait for it.
What do you get They're in your waiting. Omelet?
I often like to say, in a perfect world, Sunday, I'll say, oh, I have a Western omelet. But not everybody knows what goes into the Western omelet. So sometimes I just say, okay, not tomatoes because they make it wet.
Everything.
No.
Put it all in there.
No. Spinach. You could make a Florentine omelet, but that's very specific, or something with feta or mozzarella. That's very specific. So I go for the basics, okay? I go ham and red and green peppers, onions, mushrooms, and some cheddar cheese on top.
What about shrimp? You ever get the shrimp in there?
No.
You don't want the shrimp in your omelet?
Oh, that sounds bad. No.
You'd
and I'll
rather
get
ham
strips,
than bacon?
And I go to the regular buffet with my omelet on the plate, and then I pile on the bacon on the side. So it's a separate thing. The strips of bacon.
Now, these kids were newcomers to the,
a full-on,
the buffet.
Yes, a full-on. Not a continental,
did
but a
full-on buffet. Did you introduce them to the idea of getting your money's worth and beating the house? Or is that an advanced buffet?
No.
I
gave them that sort of advice midway through. Right?
How did you explain it to them?
I just said, you're doing a great job. Keep on going. Don't worry. It's not over yet. You know, there's no rush. How much did you get? And I saw how much my nephew had piled on his plate. I said, that's a good sign. Don't worry. You're doing great. You already, you know, kids was like $12 for kids. I said, you already got more than $12 worth. Mission accomplished. That's what I told them.
Well, so the only reason that, you know, beating the house would come into play is if there is an option between a la carte and buffet. Is there the option between a la carte and buffet?
If
you're going there and it's just a buffet, it doesn't matter. The cost is sunk.
But if
you have to choose between, like, well, do I want, like, the three pancake, three eggs, three bacon, or whatever.
Here, You never want to. It does not matter if it's the buffet or only the buffet plus a la carte. You always want to walk away from any buffet.
That's not a healthy way to live or eat.
I beat the house.
Always beat the house.
Okay.
But how do you even calculate that? Do you calculate it again? Like, you're never going to eat, you are never going to eat more food than the food cost on the buffet.
I can do that.
I don't think you can.
I got to use the bathroom and then I come back.
Do you have any idea what the markups are on these things? Crazy.
Okay.
Crazy.
You know what else is good? Elastic waistband. I didn't want to get into those things. The maternity jeans. Those things are great. Those things are amazing. Speaking of amazing, over the long weekend, Spider-Man Far From Home climbed its way to the top spot at the box office with $185 million. That's for the long weekend. The actual regular weekend is $93 million, followed by Toy Story 4 with $34 million. And in third place yesterday with $10 million, I also want to say thanks to listeners who shared their love of Lily James with me. So I'm glad I am not the only Lily James fan. For all of you, please check out
sharing the love of Lily James.
Share the love.
An erotic adventure with Vic Mattis.
Check out the exception. That's all I'm going to say. Box office thoughts. Sonny.
Sequelitis is not a thing, maybe. At least when it comes to Disney branded movies, right? This is Richard Rushfeld has been kind of mocking the idea of sequelitis in his newsletter for the last couple weeks here. Because look, you have Toy Story, which has now grossed, Toy Story has now grossed over $300 million domestic and $650 million worldwide. So it's well on its way to doing big numbers. The Spider-Man movie has grossed, I think, $600 million worldwide already. It's headed toward a billion. Look, the sequelitis is a thing in the sense that I think people are done going to, we've discussed this before in the show, I think people are done going to bad movies in franchises they don't really care about that are not really continuing a story they're interested in. So, for example, Godzilla King of the Monsters. Nobody's really begging for a continuation of the Godzilla / Kong Skull Island universe.
Men in Black International.
Men in Black International. Ugh. You know, that's
if I had a nickel for every time somebody has told me, man, I wish there was another Men in Black movie.
But this time.
So many nickels.
In Europe.
The issue here is that people don't want to see stories that they don't want to see. I think that's good. That's a good thing, right? That means maybe we'll get more original stuff. I think mostly it means we'll just get fewer movies, but I don't know. Anyway, Spider-Man Far From Home did huge numbers. The projections kept creeping up all weekend. You know, originally the 6-day was looking at something like $150 million. By the end, it was up to $180 million. It's doing huge numbers. So,
JVL, your thoughts? I saw a thing on Elevator News.
Elevator
News that Avengers is almost there, but it's that last bit that...
It'll never make the last
15 million,
right?
Short?
No, it's only like 12 million short.
Is it?
They could
let it play all summer long.
Yeah, they got to
like
let it...
150 theaters or something.
They'll end up throwing it on a bunch of drive-in screens at the end of the summer. And
you know how, like, once a year we get some Pew report which says, you know, breaking news, 37% of millennials get their news from The Daily Show, or 50% of Americans get their Facebook as their primary news source. When do we get to a point where it's like, 10% of Americans get their news primarily through the elevator?
We're already there.
Right there. I don't even read the news. I just go right to the elevator.
Frankly, I don't think Vic actually reads the Free Beacon anymore to find news. He actually works in a news gathering operation, and he hasn't looked at the homepage for months now.
When he wants to know what's going on, he just goes to the elevator bank.
Excuse me, I'll be right back.
He just has to ride it up, and because if you ride it like two or three times, you'll get the whole cycle.
I came in this morning. I said, did you hear the British ambassador resign? I just learned about it. An Elevator News. Mm. So
it's a really handy mix of like interesting international news and learning about what scotches. Yeah. are for
sale. Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to work for Elevator News.
It's the Channel One for like office drones.
That's right. That's right.
That's amazing.
So, you were talking about Toy Story 4. The decline was pretty modest. It was about 43%.
Yeah. If it holds like a family movie, mm-hmm. it'll do between $350 and $400 million, which is a very good number.
That's a very good number for Toy Story. For Pixar.
It's not going to do the Incredibles 2 numbers, mm-hmm. but that movie grossed $600 million domestic somehow. I'm still shocked by that.
Me too.
Nobody seems to be surprised enough by this. I find it all very shocking.
It is likely to be the third highest grossing Pixar movie ever.
Toy Story 4.
Incredible. Yeah.
Toy Story 4.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's going to make a lot of money.
And do you want, since we did Spider-Man last week, would you like to give us a little review of Toy Story 4?
Sure.
Since we missed it.
Sure.
We're talking about Toy Story 4 this week.
Toy Story 4 continues the adventures of Buzz and Woody and their group of friends. They now live with Bonnie, a 4-year-old.
False. You're already wrong. Buzz Lightyear is barely in this movie.
Well, we're gonna get to that.
Let him do his review. Come on.
You hate all these dumb movies anyway. What do you care about whether or not somebody's in it?
Please.
You gonna interrupt me again, or are you gonna let me finish?
You just asked me a question.
You just asked me a question.
It was rhetorical.
Go ahead.
Toy Story 4 is about the awful metaphysical condition of these toys. Can we just game this out for a second? The reason that Forky, who is the new character in this film, is played by Tony Hale, played by
Buster.
He comes to life because he's a spork.
Hey, Woody.
Has been wrapped with little pipe cleaners and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and has Bonnie's name put on his feet, which brings him to life. Mm-hmm. Which raises a very weird question, which is that, is anything that a child plays with imbued with intelligence by some extraterrestrial force? So, like, let's say a little kid goes and, like, picks up a hammer, and it's like Mr. Hammer.
He's
dancing around with Mr. Hammer. Does that hammer have a sentience for the rest of its existence until it's tossed in the trash?
Also, I don't think it necessarily has. He comes to life, they say, because she put her name on.
Yeah, but not,
but,
all,
but
those
not
toys,
all the toys
not
have
all
their
those
names
toys have,
on,
have
so, but
a
they're
name
alive
on.
Too. Yeah.
All those army men from the first three movies,
yeah, they didn't
they,
have their
they
name.
Did not have names. Mm-mm. They, but they're all alive. They're all sentient.
I don't think I put my name on any of my toys.
So anyway, Toy Story 4 is about
they didn't come to life.
Is about the horrifying nature of existence. And also about fatherhood. It is basically about what do you do with your life once your kid has grown up. This is the whole point of the film.
JBL, do you have
thoughts here? You have thoughts? You want to chime in?
No, not
so
yet.
JBL has a lot of points here. So go ahead, Jonathan.
We can talk about that afterwards. I just never even understood it was operating at two levels. I thought it was just a story about the toys.
Mm-hmm.
That must make it a work of genius.
Go ahead. Do you have an ad read you want to do or something? I don't. I'm done. So
good going, JVL. Good going.
If you believe that you're not being snooped on or that nobody cares about your online data, well, then I'm sorry to disappoint you, but you're wrong. Because you listen to my show, you're clearly smart enough to understand that your privacy is under attack. Hackers, governments, ad companies, and ISPs are gobbling up your data, like all of it. That's why I recommend getting the software that I trust to protect my online activity, ExpressVPN. Their apps use powerful encryption to secure your data. ExpressVPN runs in the background of your computer or phone, and then you use the internet just like you normally would. You download the app, you click to connect, and voila, you're protected. I never go online without ExpressVPN, and you shouldn't either. ExpressVPN is the fastest VPN I've tried, costs less than $7 per month, and comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. ExpressVPN uses new cutting-edge technology called Trusted Server to make sure there's no logs of what you do online, Victorino. It's time to stop hackers, Big Brother, and internet companies from grabbing all your data. Take back your online privacy like I did with ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months free at expressvpn.com/WFB. That's expressvpn.com/WFB for 3 months free with a 1 year package. Visit expressvpn.com/WFB to learn more.
Thank you, JVL. That reminds me, if you don't have time to watch the entire movie, The Exception, but, I don't know, 5 minutes, you know, just make sure you have a secure network. Just watch the GIF on a secure network. Yeah. That's all I'm going to say. That's it. What did you think of... Are you you like Disney Pixar movies in general, JVL, would you say?
No.
Oh, okay. Great.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. We'll get to that at the end because I know you want to do a ranking and I have thoughts because I did this thing as you requested. What did you think of Toy Story 4? Have you been following it or did you just jump right in? Because I think if you haven't even followed the first three, you could just jump in.
Yeah, yeah. You could just jump right in. Yeah. I hated it. I hated this movie. I hate this entire franchise. I hate the Toy Story movies, and I have grown to hate Pixar.
What?
I didn't used to. I used to be a pretty sizable Pixar fan, but I have become jaded because all of the stuff that I had thought was their attempt to touch at genuine human emotions was actually just manipulation, and it's just cloying. Everything they do is cloying. The little lost girl at the carnival is a computer algorithm designed to make anybody who's a parent cry. And I resent
did
them
it?
For it.
And
I resent,
did you?
You know, yes. Yes, I did.
I did not.
And I resent them
I,
for it.
I was
it.
Kind of annoyed that it was dragging out too long, but go ahead.
No, I these toys have lives of their own. They come to life whenever people aren't looking. That's amazing. I can't believe John Lasseter came up with that. It's so amazing. And they feel the loss of purpose as children grow up, just like parents do. And, oh my God, the toys are actually the stand-ins for parents. But the parents in the movie are just these, like, stupid props or accessories when we are the actual people, the actual creations of God, who bring these children into the world and then give up our lives to raise them. It's us. It's not the cheap plastic crap from China which does it. It's the three of us. We're the ones who are doing the actual raising of the children. I hate
metaphors. How do they work?
I hate
go
it.
Go on.
All.
Go on. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, the Toy Story thing is just it's wildly overrated franchise. People treat it as if it is this holy grail of animation and Woody is an unbelievably unlikable character. He has like all the neuroticism of a Woody Allen with all the grandiosity of an Updike character. I find it impossible to root for him. At least Buzz like kind of has a thing going on. I don't know. Do you guys actually like these movies?
I like them, but I don't love them. I don't know that I would.
Are you bothered by the cult of Toy Story?
I don't think there is really a cult of Toy Story.
Absolutely. People who are animation nerds view Toy Story and Toy Story 2 as some of the greatest
Toy Story animated movies
ever made.
Toy
it's
Story,
an important movie.
Toy Story is important. 100% an important movie and was groundbreaking at the time. I think it's fine. I like it. I have always thought Toy Story 2 is overrated. I think Toy Story 3 is actually better than Toy Story 2.
Agreed.
Though I still think they should have cut Toy Story 3 right as the toys are going into the incinerator, just like cut to black, and have that be the end of the story. Which it feels like the real actual end of
the vast majority
the
of toys.
Of
that's
toys.
What happens.
I feel like that would have been more honest, but honesty is not always what they're going for here. I think I like these movies fine. I don't love any of them. And Toy Story 4 is a weird one insofar as it is very much Woody's story. It is not the story of all of the toys. As you mentioned, Buzz gets relegated totally to a side plot. Like he is like turned more buffoonish, I feel like, than even in some of the previous incarnations. And it's weird. I think it more or less works for what they're doing here, which again is like a story about Woody like moving on with his life. But yeah, I like them fine. I don't love them.
It was not my favorite Toy Story. I really like Toy Story 3 a lot, but I thought it was fine. I gave it an A. So just fine. Just fine. I gave it an A. Okay.
Was there stuff in it that worked for you?
Yes. There were three points that I thought were very funny. One was the Shining reference when Christina Hendricks' character, Gabby, she's being pushed around in that pram. I mean, it's creepy. And then as soon as you hear...
And you hear the music, Stars We'll Meet Again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I literally barked laughter in the theater when that happened. And, like, nobody else laughed.
The kids aren't going to get that, yeah. But I thought... Well, my kids will get it.
I like references. I like things I recognize. References.
Exactly.
I saw this. I heard this thing that I recognize. I was like, I recognize this. That's funny.
Okay. So. That's one thing. The Key and Peele characters, I thought they were very funny. And they're going through different scenarios about how to get the key. Worked for me. I was laughing. They pushed it to the point of absurdity. And then in the end, they do that again. But the second time about the old lady and she's having a bath and she's having a glass of wine. That's funny. I like that.
Yeah, I thought that was funny too.
And I love Duke Kaboom. I think that Keanu basically making fun of himself. Twice he gets to say, whoa. I mean, and the flashback to Canada and Rajon and his PTSD because of being rejected. And they pack in so much in terms of Canadian references into that one little bit. I thought it was gold. What I didn't like, it was really, it could have been, it's only an hour 40, but it felt longer. It felt like, I mean, they could have cut the ending significantly. The whole, wait, we're in there. No, wait, not yet. Oh, everybody's not in there. Wait, not yet. Oh, we got to get somebody. Yeah. It's just going on to, let's just get everybody on the bus.
Let me go you on
the
better.
RV.
They could have stopped the movie after about 45 seconds if Woody had just jumped into the box with Bo Peep to move on with his life.
Yeah.
Because that's how the movie
that's how
ends anyway. You literally don't need anything after that. The story does not change after that. Right, it's literally. Right. I did like Duke Kaboom quite a lot, and in the
Keanu Reeves is so good.
But
he's just very good.
The Key and Peele characters, to me, only actually got by on their own chemistry together, as much as
which
the
they
writing.
Have great chemistry.
Their chemistry together is so good. Yeah. The writing itself was kind of a little, except for the sequence you described, which was genius.
Yes. You brought this up at the onset, Sonny, the metaphysical, weirdly metaphysical thing. There's two things going on there. The one is the how is Forky created and what gives it sentience? And in the very end, during the stinger, you know, the other utensil comes to life and asks about how is this possible, and he says, I don't know, you know, and it just really well, we don't know. But
I also did like his obsession with being trash. I thought that was funny.
Accept who you
I'm
are
trash.
Just accept
trash.
It you know, chili salad, chili maybe, he says. But the other thing was, of course, the whole thing about the conscience, and that was weird. So he's like, you know, Buzz is asking how is this, you know, possible, and what the inner voice, but he doesn't understand the inner voice. And I always thought Buzz by at this point was smarter than that.
This is what I'm saying. He is like they definitely regress him a bit in this movie to like closer to Toy Story 1, I think.
It happens.
In terms of like his understanding of the world in which they live. Mm-hmm. Which I think is it's a choice. I'm not sure that I like it. I don't hate it, mm-hmm. but it's mm-hmm. it's definitely this it emphasizes the point that this is very much Woody's movie. And I guess in the end it is Woody's series. This is like a series about Woody.
Yes, and he is the least likable of all of the characters.
So I showed my almost 4-year old the first Toy Story a couple weekends ago, and she loved it. She like anytime she sees Buzz or Woody now, she's like, silly Buzz, silly Woody, because we were like, Buzz is so silly, Buzz, you know, Woody is so silly. So she loved it. She loved the first one. She was a little bored by the second one. She really liked the third one. But one of the extra features on the first one is like the original cinematics that they put together to like show what the movie was going to be about. And it's a disaster. It's like a famous Pixar disaster. Like the studio almost folded before they even got going because this was such a bad meeting. But like the Woody character is like 100 times more unlikable in the cinematic, even than he is in the rest of the
how
movie.
So?
I mean, just like he's just like he's like meaner and more bossy and like more demanding of the other toys. He's like a real nightmare and a terror. So they had to like, they went like back to the drawing board and like redesigned his whole look so he would be like more appealing, and mm-hmm. And they rewrote the character so he'd be less of a dick. So
I would say two other weird things. One is there is, you know, the random toys at the playground that go running around. Although it is funny because there's this fairy that you wind up at it. Go and it becomes mm-hmm. airborne. That's a real toy, and my daughter had that. It was given to her as a gift, and she was really excited. But it's hard plastic. Her skirt wings are hard plastic blades, and it cut her face. It like attacked her. So the fairy, I said, stay away. And she was very angry, upset about the fairy. The fairy attacked her. But again, I thought they were also pushing the envelope with the interactions with humans, because before it's like anytime there's a human present, they're completely dead. Now they're doing the voices behind the GPS, and they're pushing the pedal behind the RV for the gas or whatever, the brake, whatever it is. And it really, I don't know.
Yeah, no, they
pushed it.
I would say the coherence of the, again, the metaphysical universe in which they are dealing is very limited. They are abandoning some of the rules that they came up with at the beginning.
Single best gag in the movie is when Forky comes home and meets the other toys, and it is Wallace Shawn's T-Rex character who says, "My God, look how long his arms are!"
All right,
because he's a T-Rex.
That's great.
Is a joke not based on reference?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's an actual joke.
This movie
does not do a lot of actual jokes. This movie does a lot of slapstick humor and a lot of reference humor.
I liked it when Keanu Reeves said "whoa."
Also, I don't. You know, I'm fortunate. I have a sister who's 3 years older than me, who was not interested in Barbies at the time, but like, you know, action figures and guns and things like that. So we had Evel Knievel.
You had the Evel Knievel?
We had the Evel Knievel on the thing and on the motorcycle, and so the tires are actual rubber treads, and you had to rev it up.
Oh.
I couldn't do this. My sister could do it, where you can get him to do the popper wheelie, you know, across. But of course, there's no way it's doing what, you know. It's funny because the idea, like in a commercial, that'll jump through the ring of fire, even if it's only, you know, 2 inches above the ground. There's no way any kid can pull that. You know, it's just impossible. So I thought that was very amusing. We also had the Bionic Man.
The stretchy Bionic?
No. He was
an action figure. Stretch Armstrong.
That's right. Stretch Armstrong. We're talking about Lee Majors.
Like a 12-inch Bionic Man doll up his arm.
That's
and
right.
Stuff.
You can roll back a rubber sleeve, and he had a robotic arm, and one of the eyes was like a...
Yes.
Yeah, because he was a sidebar.
That's pretty good.
Loved that guy. I don't know why by the end he was missing all his clothes, but that happens with kids. Okay. You had a ranking thought, JVL? Tell us about it.
Well, I had two rankings that I compiled. I compiled a worst five Pixar movies and I ranked the Pixar franchises.
Okay.
Which interests you more?
I only did bottom, but if...
Well, then I'll just rank them. We'll all do something different.
Okay, go ahead.
I ranked the franchises because that's what Pixar does now. There was a time in which Pixar was the golden house of animation because, look, they know that you don't have to make sequels to make movies. You can just make great original content that people love. Since 2010, Pixar has made 11 films, 7 of them have been sequels. And of the 4 original ones they did, only one of them has been any good.
Mm. All right.
Yep. So the Pixar franchises, number 5, Cars, number 4, Toy Story, number 3, Monsters, number 2, Nemo, number 1, Incredibles. No one denies this.
Incredibles is great.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Nemo's great.
I have to say, I'm not a huge fan of the original Incredibles. I know a lot of people, especially a lot of people in our world, the world
Matt
of conservatives.
Continetti.
Really, really. Is Matt a huge Incredibles fan?
Giant Incredibles fan.
I like the Incredibles. I admire it more than I like it, I think. I like a lot of the design elements, and I like the look of it, and I like how the animation works. We discussed this when The Incredibles 2 came out. And I like the way, in The Incredibles 2 in particular, some of those action scenes feel almost like math equations, like trying to figure out how the physics of Elastigirl would actually work. I like all of that intellectually and conceptually, and the movies just leave me cold. They just leave me totally cold. Mm. Which is not what I want from a Pixar movie. I want to be made to cry. I want to be manipulated till
the
tears
only way you can cry?
Are coming down my
the
face.
Only way you're capable of crying is in a Pixar
JBL,
movie.
This is a very specific algorithm
yeah,
for
no,
Sunny.
100% the only way that I can feel human emotion anymore is watching emotions given to other things. So like, if toys have emotions, great. If cars have emotions, fantastic. Give monsters emotions, that's right. Give emotions emotions, and I am there.
Which Pixar movie hits you the hardest in the old tear duct?
Oh boy.
I would say in recent years, well, I mean the up montage, the up montage is like
the opening?
The Ne Plus Ultra of like tear jerking. Here is 5 minutes of a silent movie that just shows you the life of this guy.
That's,
and it is,
can I tell you? In that the part that gets me in that montage of all the things is when she's in the hospital and it's clear the doctor's telling her she can't have a baby.
Oh yeah, that is
because you see the picture. It's clearly an OBGYN, and you know what's going on. And it's like no, it's just okay.
The other one there is one that that hits me harder, and I'm trying to look up what the character is because I want to
is it
make
Dory?
Sure I get this right. No, it's in
because finding Dory just wrecks me.
Really,
finding Nemo, finding Dory,
finding Dory. It's about special needs kids, and it. Oh my god.
Okay. Here it is. It's in Inside Out actually.
Oh, Inside Out.
I didn't see Inside Out.
Inside Out, the moment where Bing Bong sacrifices himself.
Yes.
And like fades into nothingness. Just like the tears down the face.
Right.
That's the end of childhood. It's like,
yeah,
it's the most like explicit and like succinct depiction of like the death of the moment your childhood like finally dies and you like move into like adolescence.
I was gonna say, so I haven't seen Inside Out, but my understanding is that's the part where you stop being able to make believe. You can't, I mean, like actively enjoy doing. You could pretend to do make believe if you have kids, but that's when you stop. That's the end of Bing Bong. Is that it? When you
kind
start,
of, kind yeah, of, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember that ended for me with Channel 31 on the cable box.
Sorry. I assume that's like the scrambled Playboy channel.
It was mostly
something.
Static.
But if you,
mostly
but if you
static.
Move every once in a while,
the dial
the picture
on the side.
The pictures would come together for a split second.
There were two dials you
could
play with.
You had to get them in the middle.
But then I'm using both hands. What's the point? Okay, so this is really, really inappropriate. I'm sorry. This is way too inappropriate. Way too inappropriate.
From Bing Bong to...
to Bing.
Bing.
Sorry. How are we doing on time? Is that it? We're winding up now. Are we done? We're almost done.
We're in good shape.
Okay, good. Oh my God. Thank you, JVL, for that.
So are you going to do your worst five?
Okay, my worst. Ranking. Okay, ready? Incredibles 2, then Brave. That was it. That's all I had.
Those are your worst?
Those are your worst?
Okay, I imagine if I hadn't seen Cars 3, I imagine that'd be on there, but I just didn't have the strength to see Cars 3. I haven't seen Coco or The Good Dinosaur. People seem to like Coco. I had a Good Dinosaur. Maybe that would be on the list. I just like the other ones. I'm sorry. Even
you
Cars,
like
2.
Cars 2.
Yeah, even Cars 2 with Michael Caine. Yes.
You like Toy Story.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
All right, here's my bottom five.
Sorry. Shocking?
My bottom five. Number five. This is
number five meaning
number five meaning the least worst.
Got it. Okay.
Number five is Toy Story. Number four is Cars 2. Number three is A Bug's Life. Number two is Cars 3. Number one is The Good Dinosaur.
I skipped it.
These are also the five lowest grossing Pixar films in order. They're obviously the worst since the fewest number of people saw them.
Okay.
Now, funnily enough, my bottom five is very close to yours. Except that I didn't see The Good Dinosaur.
Neither did I. I'm glad.
Nobody did. It grossed $123 million. It was a real disaster.
Oof. Okay. Do we have any other Toy Story Pixar thoughts? No? Okay. I would just like to add, in watching Channel 31, you did have to make sure your blinds were down. Speaking of which, when you need new blinds, there's only one place to go, blinds.com. With 15 million windows covered and over 30,000 five-star customer reviews, blinds.com is America's number one online retailer for affordable, quality, custom window coverings. Whether you're looking for energy efficiency, you just moved, or want to refresh the look of your home, Blinds.com makes the whole experience so fast and easy. Plus, every order gets free samples, free shipping, a free online design consultation. Just send them pictures of your house and they send back custom recommendations from a professional for what will work with your color scheme, furniture, and specific rooms. They'll even send you free samples to make sure everything looks as good in person as it does online, and every order gets free shipping. And this is the best part. If you accidentally mismeasure or pick the wrong color, if you make a mistake, Blinds.com will remake your blinds for free. They've really made it easy for you, so there's no excuse to leave up those mangled blinds. And for a limited time, our listeners get $20 off at Blinds.com when you use promo code SUBBEACON. That's Blinds.com, promo code SUBBEACON for $20 off. Forward blinds, cellular shades, roller shades, and more. Blinds.com, promo code SUBBEACON. Rules and restrictions apply. Corrections, additions, shout-outs. Anything?
I have something.
Please, JVL.
I have not contributed to this segment in months.
No, welcome back.
I got an email from our friend Michael R. Warren.
Ooh.
Of CNN.
Oh, CNN's Michael
former
Warren.
Former guest host.
CNN's Mike Warren, who wrote in about the Rocket Man
episode.
Oh,
I bet he did. I bet he did.
And you know what he had to say?
What?
He had to say that I was exactly correct. That Elton John was better than Billy Joel and Queen and Bruce Springsteen.
No.
That Elton John was clearly and easily
no.
the best of those four acts.
Greater than Queen, tied with Billy Joel, less than Springsteen.
Simply false. Mm. Michael R. Warren, who knows a lot,
you know what?
Who's on
about
TV
this stuff, and
he
is on TV.
He's on TV. Check him out. That must mean he's right. I have a correction as well. Thanks to listener Eric Crotty for correcting me for mentioning Hinkle Airfield. It's Hickam. That's where the two pilots went after the attack on Pearl Harbor. Remember, they put aside their differences because they were in love with the same woman, and they splashed the zeros.
Yes.
Thanks largely to the mechanic, Tom Sizemore.
Yeah, that's good.
People forget about him. Sonny.
He had some problems later in life.
A little bit.
I believe that was his last performance before things spiraled out of control for him.
Before the thing with what's her name? Remember, because he was...
Heidi Fleiss.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Oof.
Entirely possible. I just want to give a shout out to a friend of the show, Travis Smith. You may remember his great book, Superhero Ethics. A lot of you guys bought it. And I think he realized that, you know, our audience is so powerful. We can move product. So he sent along a CD by his wife, Katie Dishon. I'm going to spell this because I'm sure I'm pronouncing it wrong. And you can go to her website. It's www.katiedishon.com and check out her music. She is a jazz artist. I'll be honest, I don't listen to a lot of music, so I have no frame of reference as to whether or not you guys will like it or not. But check it out and let us know. Okay,
that's great. Thank you. That's all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments. Tweet us at Victorino Mattis, at Sonny Bunch. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play. Just type in SubBeacon at a podcast. We're there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time. So what else is going on? Anything else? We're good.
I don't really have anything. Do you have anything, Victorino?
I have one thing.
Yeah.
While I was in Connecticut, we visited good friends of my in-laws, Larry and Carolyn, who live in a lovely home in Connecticut. And he is a very, very generous man. And Larry's a great. And he said to me, "Hey, check out the car." And he had two cars, and one was a Bentley.
Ooh.
And he said,
"Ooh.
Keys are inside. Why don't you take it for a spin?"
Oh, look at that!
How was it?
I drove it with four kids packed in that car. I don't think anybody had seatbelts in the back. And I was terrified.
But it's actually enormous, right? Like, and you can fit all three kids
except for the,
like
the middle seat had the fancy thing that you could put your drinks on.
Put up or put down.
Yeah. So it was dense. Everything is piled on. One of the kids is in the front with me, and then like three kids in the back. And then I gunned it. It's over 500 horsepower.
Oof.
And you really feel it. And everyone loved it. But I was terrified. You know, I mean, I just went back and forth on a stretch of road because it's a Bentley. And then even parking it back at the house, you know, like I want to get it close, but I'm tapping on the brake and, you know, and the thing is beeping like you're getting close, and I want to get a little bit closer. But of course, you have that fear that if you step too much on the gas, then it's just going to ram right into
the stones. Step off the brake.
It was a little bit. It was a little bit on an incline, so it's like. So I left it at that, and then he said, "Great." He goes, "You know, I have a 1946 Ford. Would you like to drive that?" I said, "Great." He goes, "Yeah, you do." And he's an ex-Marine, self-made millionaire, very good. He goes, "Vic, you could take that for a spin. You drive stick, right?"
Did you reply, "I'm sure it's fine"?